there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cast Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now live via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. We're officially here. We're in the dregs, the dog days. You know, there's no Cavs basketball for some time. Thank God we got some news.
We do.
Something fun to react to. Some new jerseys, some new threads, Justin.
That's right.
The jersey man yourself.
Yeah.
has been gifted.
Summer League is over and the Cavs have a new look. I was very excited to see the new look. I obviously seeing the Hoop V back on the jersey is really, really exciting. I think white is my clear favorite. And it seemed like the overwhelming reaction was positive. I mean, jerseys are probably the most subjective thing ever. And there's so many concepts that get shared before reveal. I think people always will find kind of versions that they like the most. But I really like this look. I think it's a lot of fun. Personally, I always like when there's the different color on the piping. But then I saw a whole bunch of people point out that they actually don't like that and prefer the solid color. So that got me questioning, do I like that just because that's what I'm used to? But I think they're really sharp, really clean, and I'm excited to see the Cavs out there in this new look.
Yeah, I think I'd like to start with the things I like and then move on to the things that, you know, are a little bit more controversial, and then maybe some you know, things maybe I would like to, if I might have done different. I think I love the white. I think is such a I think it's such a pretty look. One thing that's nice about, you know, not having the trim on the sleeves and a bunch of different layers is you kind of have to have a logo worth throwing up there. You know, like it's got to be the star of the show. And because I love the bucket V, it's an easy sell for me. I think when you look at the details that the team posted, and I'm going to go ahead and scroll if you're watching up on YouTube, because I think they posted some of these details up here. Yeah, they do. And you could, the way that they interlace the gold into the font, on that Cavs logo, I think is a really nice look. You know, I think I just think it's just such a nice look. I even love the little subtle basket V on the waistband. I almost wish they actually went with that bucket V a little bit more often.
Yeah,
in this just the solo bucket elsewhere in the package. But overall, I think that's definitely my favorite. The black one is one that's really growing on me. I didn't expect to love it.
I normally don't like the big solid C, but with it being gold and kind of with the solid black, rather than, you know, when they had kind of like the Goodyear jersey where it was a smaller C and then kind of the tire tread on there, it really pops. I think that the black is actually really good. And I think the wine looks a lot better with the gold versus the kind of the busier look that they had before with some blue in it as well. I think it looks really good. And they've all really grown on me, honestly.
Yeah, I love the moving on to pick and nits. Mm-hmm. I would have loved the bucket V instead of the big C on the wine logo. I think that would have looked really nice. I'm not a big C guy for the most part. That's not my preferred logo, but I think it certainly works within the brand package. We're mostly picking nits. I was on team maybe a little bit of trim, but our lovely Chase Down Discord, which is of course immediately started arguing like cats and dogs about the release, as any hardcore fans are wont to do. Someone posted the old the 2017 I think Christmas jerseys, which were some of my favorites, that with that really rich red and the script lettering, and those didn't have trim either. And those are some of my favorite jerseys the Cavs have ever had. So overall, I think it's definitely a win. One thing that's also nice to me about this kind of more, minimalistic, I think, is the buzzword that's going around on graphic design Twitter about these jerseys. One thing that's really nice about a more subdued look as well is if they do want to iterate in the future, they don't have to rip the whole thing up and do something crazy.
Yeah.
They can add a flair or two over time, but still maintain the same look. And I think that's been a challenge for this franchise is figuring out, a core identity visually. And I think with the brand redesign and with the jersey redesign, I think they've done a really nice job in kind of rebuilding those foundations. And I think they're going to be able to build on, if you look at these three looks, all three of them are eminently buildable. Yeah. I also think the new color scheme is a lot easier to work with, jettisoning the mustard yellow and even jettisoning the navy and going with the black, wine, and gold exclusively means you can do a soft baby blue accent color if you want to have a really loud alternate jersey city edition on any given year. I just think in general they have a lot more flexibility with this package, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, what I really like is they feel like Cavs jerseys. Like, this doesn't feel like a completely new concept again, and it goes to what we've talked about a lot, which is trying to kind of establish that identity. And I think it's fitting that last year on the court, this team has established an identity, and now we kind of have a firm grasp of what the look of this era is going to be, and kind of defining, like taking notes from all different past Cavs looks and turning it into something that's a little more defined, and this is what the Cavs are moving forward. I think the shorts are awesome as well, so I'm really excited to see them. Jerseys always look better on players. It looked cool as hell on Kid Cudi, so I'm excited to see those out on the court. And I'm also
just to piggyback on that a little bit, sorry, before you change the subject, I also think minimalistic looks better on players typically. Yeah. Like, I think that, again, you go to those Christmas jerseys and there's nothing to them. Mm-hmm. It's a script Cavaliers on the front and then a little logo on the back, and that's it. But when you nail those details and that'll be the real test the first time we see them on these players. But like, I think in general, like, I think minimalistic works better in practice than it does on paper. And like, so I would urge anyone who's disappointed, which, this is all Coke or Pepsi, like, this is all whatever you prefer. But I definitely like them. And I think that the people who are maybe like, let's say a 6 out of 10 on them, like they don't hate them, mm-hmm. but they're not in love. I think seeing them in context will maybe bump their point, bump them up a point or two for just about anyone who's watching.
Yeah, and someone pointed out to me too that the Raptors' recent rebranding, a lot of their jerseys don't have the trim either, and I've never really noticed it, and I think that their look looks really good as well. So I think this might just be a situation where it's something that's new to me, and I don't necessarily associate with the Cavs, and it's just going to take time to get used to. But I think that this is a really, really big improvement. I'm very excited to see the guys out there. And I'm particularly excited, Carter, to see Ochai Agbaji out there in that jersey, because Summer League was a lot of fun for Ochai. I think he ended up shooting about 38% from three over the course of Summer League. You saw some of maybe the limitations finishing on the inside and creation within the three-point line. But I thought that it was a fantastic Summer League, and it also feels like the reception to how he played was overwhelmingly positive, because I think, like, throughout Cavs Twitter and throughout the people we talked to, it is just so obvious to see how he's going to fit into a rotation, and it is so clear that, yeah, this is a guy with two-way impact that addresses a major need that this team has had. And there's also the understanding that if this is what he was doing under these circumstances, he's going to look even better with more talent around him. He's one of those kinds of players. And I could not be more excited to have Ochai be part of the Cavs this season.
Yeah, I think that, you know, something I talked a lot about with Ochai in the pre-draft process as we were kind of trying to do our evals is, you know, I really warned against the high floor pick, because what people often forget about these high floor, low ceiling, you know, quote unquote, you know, high floor, low ceiling picks is their floor is not as guaranteed as you think in the NBA. There are a lot of guys who looked safe and then they couldn't do the one thing they were supposed to be good at, and then all their other limitations just tanked their careers. So, you know, I had a healthy inherent skepticism going into Summer League, not negativity or anything, just like, hey, I just want to see it. And
honestly, someone has to do it on this podcast, and it's usually you.
And I am so sure this guy is an NBA shooter after Summer League. And that was kind of the thing. I didn't think he was. I think he will be an okay defender. I don't think he'll be an elite defender. I think he'll be a good one once he gets his sea legs under him and a couple reps in the league. But I thought the shooting had to be really good off the move and all over the court for him to be the high floor player that the Cavs thought they were getting. And good news, I'm pretty sure they got it, because this dude can shoot the crap out of the ball. He loves the dribble handoff going from the left corner to the left wing or to the above the break. That's definitely, you can tell that's going to be his pet action. Mm-hmm. And it's just so nice, because when he's on the floor, for the most part, he's going to be the fourth person that's being paid attention to, fifth. Yeah. And that is quite a luxury. This team did not have good spacing, especially movement spacing with a quick trigger last year. And I'll be honest, Justin, it's kind of hard to see how he's not in the rotation, just given how vital of a service that he provides that the team doesn't really have otherwise right now.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I think everything that I've seen said publicly is, you know, doing the right thing, and you have to kind of give the nod to the guys that have been here. But it's just hard to envision him not earning minutes, just because of the fact that he does address those needs and doesn't such an obvious way. Like, he's fully grown body. He's such a mature player. I think there's a lot of opportunities that when you were watching those games, that if he was playing with a Darius Garland or a Kevin Love or even an Evan Mobley, that'll throw kind of those hit ahead passes. Like, he gets out in transition. He runs the floor. He gets to the corners. A lot of cuts where, if there was somebody that was, you know, more capable of making those passes on the court with him, probably would have gave him easy buckets on the interior. So when there's more talent around him, I'm going to be really excited. Chris Vernon actually made this point on the podcast, the Mismatch podcast today that I was listening to. And it just kind of dawned on me that he was completely right. It seems like this Summer League, everyone's just content with their pick. Like, there's no, like, pick 30 that just completely tore it up and people are kind of wondering and already redoing their mock drafts and who should have gone where and all that. It seems like everybody's pretty settled into where they're at and everyone's pretty happy with their pick, which is unique. And I mean, maybe some of that is, you know, we've seen injuries like Jeremy Sochan wasn't able to play with a hamstring. AJ Griffin was banged up and unable to participate.
Johnny Davis may never recover from the latest Greatest of All Talk podcast, I'll tell you that much.
I feel really bad for our friend of the podcast, Andrew Sharp, because I texted him on draft night being like, oh man, you got such a stud here in Johnny Davis. And
Tough start for you, boy.
Tough start, and once again, a great example of why we don't take our draft takes too seriously, because we jump in really late, and we are going
and
to have
he might
some...
be fine, to be clear, but it yeah. was not an encouraging start.
Yeah, you know I'm feeling a little shaken when it comes to my confidence in Johnny Davis.
Me too. Yeah, the one team I think should actually be over the moon, and this is an unconventional over the moon. I think the Kings should be, they should be so pleased. Keegan Murray looks a lot better than I thought he'd be. I thought he was a high floor, medium ceiling guy, the kind of guy who might go fifth or sixth overall to a team that has some playoff hopes, but you know, not show a ton of upside. And oh, buddy, that guy has got a lot of interesting little quirks to his game. And if I were a Kings fan, I would be. You don't normally get to say that about the fourth overall pick. you know, he should look good, but like, I think given the idea of like, oh, they had to take Murray because they have all these guards and he was kind of a fit pick. Oh, dude, that guy looks amazing.
He does look amazing. And honestly, the top of the draft looks like they've all come out really well. Like, I think Houston did really well, obviously, with Jabari falling and Tari Eason looked good. Ty. Detroit, obviously, with Durin and Ivy. Like, Paolo looked great for Orlando. Chet looked awesome. Jalen Williams looked awesome. This looks like it's going to be a fun draft class. And man, a lot of those teams being in the East just gives us more and more competition as we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, it is looking like some roof stoof here, man. I don't know who we had to curse to suddenly be in the power conference, but this East is bananas, Justin.
Well, not only is the East bananas, I think the whole league is adjusting and getting ready for what the Cavs are going to be bringing to the table. I mean, Minnesota going all in to have two bigs. Indiana was trying to do that, throwing the max at DeAndre Ayton, which got matched by Phoenix. It's an arms race, man. It's an arms race to try to deal with the oncoming Cavalanche, which is very, very apparent in my humble opinion. But before we talk about the rest of the East, I just want to see, do you have any other takeaways from any of the guys that were at Cavs Summer League? I saw the NBL tweeted out that Luke Travers has committed to returning to Australia for this year. Not a surprise. All the reporting and messaging has been draft and stash, so I'm sure we'll see that officially confirmed soon. But yeah, did you have any other takeaways from Cavs Summer League?
Yeah, Isaiah's not quite ready yet. Yeah. I think it was a bit of a sobering Summer League run for your boy. And by your boy, I mean me, not Isaiah Mobley. you know, it was an interesting one where I saw all the reasons why I was so excited about the pick and why I thought that, you know, anyone screaming nepotism would, you know, realize that they were, you know, maybe jumping the gun a little bit. But the 3-point range wasn't there at all. Mm-hmm. I think he probably went 2 of 15 or something like that. It was not good. He had a hard time protecting the rim. I think early on, I think, you know, when he was in position, he was good. But, you know, if he closed, and this was in the tape, you know, like if you paid attention to, you know, to what he did at USC, you could see like, hey, if you get him out in space, you know, he maybe isn't quite as good if, you know, if he has to do a hard close out to the corner. But really, I think it was mostly about the 3-point jumper and then also not knowing. It's really hard, I think, going from being the featured playmaker on your offense and then going to this spot where it's like, okay, I have all this latent playmaking skills. I can dribble, I can pass, but I'm not really supposed to be making that. I'm not supposed to be that visually obvious in my role at the next level. I think, and I've shouted him out like two podcasts in a row, and I'm worried that he's going to start getting an ego about it. But DH in our Discord said that like his biggest challenge is trying to showcase his skill without doing it on every play.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, some time with the Charge will do that guy some good. My stock remains just as high because I believe in the jumper. And I think that if he is
Summer League, let's be honest, Summer League's not exactly a situation or environment that's conducive to him showing off what he can do. Like, there wasn't a lot of playmakers. Everyone's kind of looking to get their own shot, and you're looking to showcase what you can do. And definitely felt like he was pressing a little bit at times, because you run up and down the court and you don't get a touch, and you want to make something happen and you want to make an impression. But I definitely, like, I still feel really good about it. The passing is brilliant. Like, you can see all of the tools being there. It's just going to take some time to adjust to NBA range. I think him playing with a charge and being in the Cavs development system is going to do him wonders. I think it's a really good kind of project to take a chance on and to groom the same way that we saw with Dean Wade, right? Like, it took him some time with the charge before he was ready to come up and contribute in the ways that he has since establishing himself as an NBA player. So,
yeah, I just think if he looked like in college, you look at the tape and you say, I hope this guy can get to 36-37% from three.
Yeah.
If he can get there, he will be an NBA player and be very, very helpful. If he can't get there, it's going to be a lot harder. That is my summary on the back end of Summer League with Isaiah Mobley. So, and Travers, I thought was great. I thought he showed a lot. And if he can't shoot, he's going to need to stay in Australia.
Yeah. He is very raw offensively still. He looks like a tad slow out there, but he just seems to know how to use his body. He's just such an intelligent player. There's a lot of basketball IQ there. So I thought he looked good. RJ Nembhard looked like RJ Nembhard, right? Like, he definitely can score on basically anyone at Summer League, and that wasn't too surprising. So it was fun to get a taste of the Cavs at Summer League. I thought it was a successful trip down. Nobody got hurt. That's the most important thing at this time of year, because there's nothing worse than a Summer League injury. But you know what? It was a lot of fun. But we were starting to pivot to it, and I think we need to talk about it now, because we have talked, Carter, about how the picking of Agbaji and some of the free agent moves were a vote of confidence for guys that were already on the roster. And I think the other part of the equation, the other side of that coin, when we talk about Cavs team building this summer, is just the state of the Eastern Conference, particularly the strength at the top. Like, Boston, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Miami are all solidly the top four in the East. If you're going to overtake one of them, you're either getting wild internal leaps, or there's some injury luck, right? Like, that kind of stuff happens throughout the course of a season, or there's maybe a little bit of dysfunction, whatever the case may be. But the Eastern Conference is looking like an absolute monster this year, Carter, and it's only going to get tougher. I mean, you look at the DeJounte Murray trade for Atlanta, obviously, you know, pushing a lot of chips in the table, basically all their future chips when it comes to draft picks, to add Murray. It seems like the New York Knicks may be adding Donovan Mitchell. All the tea leaves seem to be pointing in that direction, and that's been one of those things that's just kind of been rumored forever. And I do think, like, you have to factor in when you're going to make that push, right? Like, when you feel confident that you're maybe a piece away and we're going to push all of our chips into the center of the table. And the reality is, right now, and I want to get your thoughts on what you feel about this trend, it seems like pushing chips into the middle of the table means something a lot different than it used to be, because teams are trading unprecedented amounts of unprotected first round picks.
Yeah, I think it's probably a byproduct of, I just think teams are seeing who's in the finals the last couple of years and going, are they that good?
Yeah.
You know, like, this is, I think to some extent, like, I think I'm guilty of this too. You look at three unprotected first for DeJounte Murray and you go, oof, that's bad. But you almost, I think especially Cavs fans probably are still thinking about the fact that, like, you used to be so good to make the finals from like 2015 to 2018. You had to be a legendary team to make the finals. And now you have to be pretty solid.
Yeah.
You know, the Warriors team that just won the title is what, 70% as good as the 2016 Warriors?
Yep.
I just think that, Like, we all but Boston probably...
was out there without a point guard. Like, you used to not, when you were playing the Kevin Durant Warriors and even the 73 win Warriors, you could not have flaws in your lineup. Like, you almost had to have two-way guys at every single position. And if you had guys that struggled defensively, like Kyrie, they needed, like, Kyrie had to step up on the defensive end of the floor. And he also had to achieve just such a high level of offensive output that it would outweigh any of those deficiencies.
Yeah, I think there's a degree of no one's as far as they used to be if you are in your mind a 45 to 50 win core, mm-hmm. adding an all-star is not nothing. You know, I think about this. Would anyone have thought the Suns would have jumped to title contention after trading for CP3?
No,
I
thought they might get into like the mix, like, you know, a home court team that could beat anybody. But I certainly didn't think that they would be as good as they've been.
Yeah. So I think that there is a degree of like, you know, like, it's not the Wolves sucked last year. They won 46 games. Yep. You know, that the Hawks made an Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago. So these teams probably, rightly or wrongly, are like, people think we're real far away, but we're not that far away. So I think there is a degree of that, but also they're teams that are like already there, you know, like the Cavs, even like a guy like Darius is not on the same development cycle as the Hawks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
do,
what
do you, I think, feel like the Hawks were right there? Cause like, to me, that is such an interesting situation because
I think they're a unique scenario.
They are a really unique scenario. Cause I feel like the Cavs were a better team than them last season. I feel pretty confident saying that. I don't think it's outlandish if someone disagrees with me on that. But I think the Cavs were a better team than them. And they've lost Kevin Huerter. They lost Gallo. And the John Collins situation is weird, right? Like, if he doesn't want to be there and they have to move him, like, do you get even close to an equal return there? And does what you've missed or what you've lost in the aggregate get made up for by adding DeJounte Murray? And the answer is probably going to be yes. Like, I am a big DeJounte Murray fan, but there's fit concerns there, right? Like, Trae Young has never played off ball. DeJounte Murray is not an off ball shooter. I think DeJounte is a phenomenal cutter and is going to work really well. And you're not going to have that same Trae Young drop off when you can stagger the two of them, so one's always on the court. But there are going to be some fit concerns. There's going to be some adjustment to that. You lost a very good floor spacer in Kevin Huerter. Like, he was a big part of their success. And now you're really kind of banking on, because I don't think DeJounte Murray gets them to contender status. They're really banking on internal development from guys like Hunter, like Okongwu, like Trae Young, to get them over the hump. And
can I also counter a little bit? I want to push a little bit further, though. Yeah. I think over the hump for teams like Atlanta and Minnesota is different, and we're not accounting for that. The T-Wolves have won like one playoff series in the last like 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, them being a team that makes two conference finals, like, it might be worth it to that fan base, you know? The Hawks have had very marginal success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they made a couple runs with the Horford squads. They had the Josh Smith squad. You know, ultimately doomed squads that were really first-round fodder more than anything. I think this Hawks team has the ceiling to be a little bit more than that. Mm-hmm. Now, will they get there or not? I don't know. But I do think this is a little different. Like, I don't think you're seeing Masai Ujiri make these kind of moves.
Yeah.
Because, like, they just want a title. They're not in a hurry to get back to the conference finals, you know? And I think the Cavs are kind of in a similar place.
Yeah. And the interesting thing to me, too, is, like, when we're talking from, like, a philosophical standpoint of trading all these picks into the future, when you do that, you no longer have those first to make the tweaks to you know, trade two first to get JR Shump and Mozgov effectively, right? Like, those types of adjustments you have to make along the way to actually go out there and win, because what we're seeing in today's NBA is the talent is so deep, simply getting one or two stars isn't going to put you into contention. Like, you can get swept in the first round with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, right? And yes, that was a unique situation, but even LeBron and Anthony Davis, like, LeBron being on the team, basically guaranteed that you would be a playoff team. But the standard keeps getting raised higher and higher in today's NBA. And I look at the Atlanta Hawks, and I have to wonder if after they traded all those picks for Murray, within a few days, Kevin Durant requested a trade. The Hawks would have had one of the best packages for Kevin Durant if they want to trade all their picks. They had Hunter. They had all these guys that they could have moved for him. Was there any regret there that you missed out on that opportunity? Because once you go all in and you trade your, or you give up your ability to trade all picks until 2023, you now take yourself out of the running in all of those scenarios. And I think, like, if I'm looking at it from a Cavs perspective, I definitely would have been interested in DeJounte Murray, but I don't know if I'd want to trade every pick until 2020 or 2030 if I'm not receiving a wing as well. Like, if Keldon Johnson's in the deal, maybe the calculus is a little bit different. But for me, just adding DeJounte Murray without addressing the wing and not really having a lot of avenues to go out and do so, to me, what these teams are doing feels a little bit reckless, and it feels like first-round picks are being a little undervalued at this point.
I think they're definitely being a little undervalued, and it's just, I mean, it, I think from, to some extent, it is a straight up, like, I think GMs are realizing that it doesn't actually matter that much for them. Like, mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, you're fired anyway, so who cares?
Yeah.
And, you know, you can kind of sell owners on this, and I do think there is, you know, you're kind of betting on the league being volatile in a negative way, but, you know, if it flips against you, you're definitely exposing yourself to risk. And you know, it's funny, I think before the deal, I think if we were talking about Cavs trading for a guy like DeJounte, you could have maybe talked me into, you know, maybe not three unprotected or whatever it was, whatever that crazy haul was, but you could have talked me into quite a big haul. And it was funny because it was like the second the trade happened, I went, ah, that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like, you know,
especially with, you know, a lot of those picks coming after he's an unrestricted free agent. Like, if there are any concerns about how he and Trae Young fit together and they don't get along and he wants to go to another situation, because that's the tricky thing with Murray too, is like, you can't sign an extension with him because it has to be within a percentage of his current bargain deal. So you're really kind of taking a chance there if things don't work out over the next 2 years. And we've seen friends like in the league where guys are get along really well off the court. Teams move heaven and earth to put them together, and it just doesn't work out within the basketball context. And there may be a point where the Cavs have to make this kind of a move. But to me, I don't think we're there yet in the team building standpoint. And I think you almost have to figure out, are we that kind of a move away first? And I don't think we have enough data points for that, because we only got 40 games of Garland, Mobley, and Allen together last year. And we know, like, two-thirds of the way through the season, the Cavs were near the top of the standings. But obviously, it was a weird season. Brooklyn fell down because of the vaccination situation, Kevin Durant injuries, the James Harden drama. Boston's a much better team now than they were even in the finals. Miami's making some tweaks. Philadelphia, I think, has improved. Milwaukee's still going to be there. And I think before you go all in and say, okay, we are one fringe all-star away and we're going to give up all our picks, because, I mean, let's be honest, that's what DeJounte Murray is. He was an all-star injury replacement in the middle of his 20s. Before you make that kind of assessment, I think it goes back to what we were talking about before, where you have to figure out how much you can win now with what you have before you decide, okay, I'm comfortable mortgaging the future because I think the core that we have is special enough and it just needs that one more piece. And maybe it isn't some sort of like league shaking move where you're adding a all-star or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's a smaller addition.
Maybe it's drafting, you know, a ready-made 3-and-D.
Maybe he's going to be our Desmond Bane. I mean, you know what? We're in the end of July, basically. We can start getting a little bit reckless and optimistic. Maybe he ends up being our Desmond Bane and totally changes the calculus. And I actually was talking about this on Twitter with our former boss, David Zavak, and just kind of talking about the biggest X factors going into this year. And to me, the biggest one is, who does anyone step up and really solidify themselves as a fourth member of the core? I know Chris Fedor came on the podcast and he talked about how Lowry's probably the closest thing to that right now. But does any of Isaac Okoro, Ochai Agbaji, Colin Sexton, if he's back, do any of those guys take a step forward, both individually and within the context of our big three, and kind of solidify their status as a core piece, 100% we're moving forward with this guy? Because if someone does, then you have all of these other pieces, whether it's expiring contracts, other talented young players, that you can maybe play with and add a fifth guy, or make the necessary adjustments from there and assess what your needs actually are. I just think we're not at the point yet where you could confidently say, we can go all in, mortgage our entire future for blank, because we don't know how far away the Cavs are just yet.
Yeah, I think that in a way, this whole season is a functional. I am so very, very sure that this team can go to war with Darius, Jarrett, and Evan for the next 5 years. I am really, I have so, like, you know me, I'm a very doubty kind of guy. I have a lot of doubts.
I've never noticed this as a general practice.
I have such confidence in that trio. I think this season, in a lot of ways, is an audition of who are our other 16 game players on the roster. Because I think you look at Lowry, you look at Colin, you look at Karis, you look at Ochai, you look at Kevin, you look at...
Sorry to cut you off, but I still think Karis can make a really big impact on this team.
Of course. And I think that, I think there is a degree of earned confidence that all of these guys should be able to help them win games in the regular season. But once you have that three that you're 100% confident in, I think Kobe's whole job is to populate the roster with 16-game players. Mm-hmm. And I think this, a two-game play-in after an injury-ravaged last third of the season wasn't super actionable data. I think this whole next season, that is the primary goal, because they haven't made a big swing. So they should just be evaluating the rest of the members of the roster, because I don't know if it's going to be easy pickings to get into the playoffs this year, looking at the rest of this Eastern Conference. I think it's actually going to be quite the battle.
Yeah.
A harder battle than it was this past year. Obviously, the team should be healthier, and that should help. But I think externally, I think the bar has risen quite a bit, and I think that they're going to learn a lot about the roster they have and how willing they should be to look to cycle out four through 10 in the rotation for the next couple years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think getting back to the mid-40s for wins is going to take a lot of work. Like, there's going to need to be a lot of internal improvement. And, I mean, the tricky thing when you're talking about these young teams is, yeah, we took a major step forward by internal growth last season, and there's a lot of reason to believe that you'll continue to get internal growth, but that's not always linear, right? And there may be bumps along the road, like... Evan Mobley becoming a more dominant kind of creator may come with some hiccups and growing pains along the way, right? So it is going to be very, very interesting. And the thing that I find fascinating too is you do have a lot of teams that have given up a lot to get where they're at now. Like, you look at the Chicago Bulls, and they gave up a lot of assets to get the team they have today. And there's no guarantee that core ever wins a first round series. Like, it just isn't. And Lonzo Ball's meniscus injury, like, they're saying now that they're hoping that he's going to be ready for the start of training camp. Like, that's scary. Like, he needs to be healthy to be a big part of that. Charlotte's got big questions as well. And I look at the New York Knicks and what they gave to Brunson and what they'll have to give up from Mitchell. You can do all that, but I don't know if Brunson, Mitchell, and RJ Barrett, like, does that get them out of the play-in? Are we confident in that?
I actually am relatively confident, because I think Julius Randle is going to be better. I know
if
that's
still
not
there after those moves.
Well, I think he will, because that contract's going to be too hard to move in the short term. But I think what the Cavs are in this interesting spot where you almost it's. I'm working on an analogy in real time, so don't hold me to it too tightly.
Oh, I'm going to drag you. Don't you worry.
It's almost like the parenting thing, where it's when your kid comes and like, all the kids in my class have a cell phone. Why don't I have a cell phone? And you're like, you can't have one yet. I feel like that about the Eastern Conference with the Cavs. You have all these teams that are going so all in to maybe get to a 50-win team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be really, really tempting for the fan base and for Kobe Altman in the front office to say, Atlanta, who we were pretty sure we were going to leapfrog if we weren't already better than them, they might be a little bit better than us. This Knicks team is now all of a sudden a little bit better than us. Do we need to? Well, I'm not saying they will be. I'm saying mm-hmm. it's a possible outcome
yep.
because they're investing in, you know, if they go get Donovan Mitchell without giving up RJ, then yep. all of a sudden they're adding quite a bit of talent to a roster that won, you know, mid 40s.
Yeah, and we're always more aware of our team's context too, right? Than other teams. Like there were a lot of other teams that dealt with weird stuff and injuries. And yes, the Cavs had more than just about any other team. But like you look at Toronto, even Fred VanVleet being banged up down the stretch, like maybe him being more healthy for a season makes a big difference. Maybe Scotty Barnes gets to the point where the team isn't better when he's off the court and kind of has that type of internal growth. Like
you're toxic, bro.
There's a lot of variables that we have to consider as well, Carter.
Yes, I know, buddy. But the point is, in the macro, I think Kobe Altman's going to have to he's going to have to tell himself, you can't have that cell phone just yet. Just hold on, buddy. It'll be better for your development if you just roll with what you got in the short term. Because the reality is the Cavs, I think it's important that Kobe Altman in the front office remember that they're not competing with the Atlanta Hawks. They're not competing with the New York Knicks. They are competing with the Miami Heat, the Boston Celtics, and the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. That is the goal. That is who you should compare yourself against. So anything that gets you better than the Hawks but doesn't get you close to the Celtics and the Bucks in the Heat of the world, I don't know if it's worth it.
You have to have some long-term planning with it as well. Like, does whatever move we make, if it involves either a lot of future picks or pieces that are young pieces that aren't necessarily part of the core, if you're moving off of any of that stuff, it can't be for a 1 or 2 year solution. Like I think your best bet to getting up to that upper echelon is through internal growth and guys like Isaac Okoro, Obagi, Sexton, even Lowry Markkanen. And we should not discount either Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, and Darius Garland, because their growth is going to be the most important thing, and that's going to be the real catalyst for how good this team can be.
Yeah, and you know, it's not that the best road to... I don't think the best road to growth is necessarily internally, but I don't think the options available... And again, this is coming from a guy who's like, just go get DeJounte Murray, because I was being thirsty, Justin, and you know... I had that moment of clarity. And, you know, I think that there is a degree of, like, you know, now if Brandon Ingram became available, then maybe your best road stops being internal improvement, but they'd better.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I figured some stuff out.
You know what I'm saying, Justin,
yeah.
is that right now, no player that is appears to be available in the market that, you know, that the Cavs could actually go get, because there's no way Masai Ujiri is sending OG Anunoby to Cleveland.
Yeah.
There's just no way. None of these external options are better than the current internal ones. That's the way I see it. And as a result, they're going to have to slow play it. And I think the season, even if they're better than they were last season, might feel a little worse as a result. If these other teams keep getting better while the Cavs are going with a much more gradual growth curve.
Yeah, and I saw some early season regular win lines, and they had Cleveland and Chicago tied for seventh in the East at 41.5 wins. Now, this doesn't factor in Brooklyn or the Knicks. Neither of those teams were listed. And then
both will be higher than the Cavs if the Knicks trade for Donovan Mitchell and the Nets don't
probably
make moves.
Probably. I won't agree with that, but I definitely think that
I think that's what will happen.
But Boston, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, then Cleveland and Chicago. And I still think like the I think the Cavs were better than Atlanta and Toronto last season. I feel pretty confident saying that. And I think Atlanta is going to go through an adjustment period, probably more of one than the Cavs will be going through next year. And it's probably going to be a bunch of teams in the same tier as the Cavs. Like that's probably how this is going to play out, whether it's Toronto, Atlanta, Chicago, and other teams in that tier. And it's going to come down to how well do you navigate the bumps in your season? Do you find ways to win when you are injured? Because the reality of today's NBA is every team gets injured. And I do think looking at some of the kind of the supplemental moves they made, like adding Howell Neto, who is a better backup point guard than we had for the majority of last season, adding someone like Robin Lopez that gives them some versatility, having Caris LeVert and Abaji and all these other guys that...
Buddy, a season of LeVert, Abaji, and Colin Sexton, which is what I believe they're trending towards right now, obviously no guarantee, mm-hmm. is such a meaningful improvement at the two and the three for this team. They were playing freaking Lamar Stevens at the two, and God bless him. I thought he worked hard and did it.
Worked as good of a somehow.
worked decently well somehow, but that guy's a 3/4 with more of a 4.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just... JB has a lot more tools in his tool belt this year as a result. And I think I'm certainly understating, at least in my own brain, the impact of having that level of infusion of talent at the wing.
Yeah. And I think something I'm guilty of, too, is just sometimes forgetting how special Evan Mobley is. That, like, that is an absolute cornerstone type dude that has the potential to be, like, a top five player in the league. And... I mean, meaningful growth from him. Like, I'm looking at it. Darius Garland averaged 25-10 after the All-Star break, Carter. Like, and with some of the worst spacing in the league due to the injuries that they had, like, we could see real, real growth. And Jared Allen continues, if he continues to get better in the margins and all that kind of stuff, like, it sucks when you're not always in the news cycle and other teams are making splashy moves, but this team has a lot of depth and a lot of guys that are going to be competing for minutes. And I think it's a really, really good environment that's conducive to competition. And I think it's going, all these guys are going to push each other to improve, because you're not going to be able to slack off, because there's going to be guys to take your minutes. I mean, we saw it at the start of last season where when Colin Sexton played really well in some games, he got to close. Even if that meant closing with Garland and Rubio, like they would go three guards at times. When you have options, you can hold guys accountable to a different extent. And I think some of what we saw at the end of the season last year was guys being
asked. Oh, we got to play you.
Yeah, guys being forced to do more than they were ready to do and having more asked of them than they were prepared to give. And whether that's Isaac Okoro, Caris LeVert going through a new situation, that doesn't appear like that's going to be the case next year. And I think that is something that's easy to kind of overlook, but I do think it's going to be a significant factor going into next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a really, really, again, I just want to, I feel like it's my duty to prep this fan base for as many or less wins while still being thinking the team's better. I just
46 Carter.
I'm not there. I think I'm not there at all yet. I need to see it. I need to see, you know, I need to see a healthy season. I need to see what the rest of the East looks like, but I am almost certain. This is a weird one where I'm expecting about a lateral or a slight drop off in the win total, but I'm expecting a better basketball team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's actually what I care about in the end, you know.
Yeah. The East is going to beat up on themselves. Like, I think win total is going to be ugly, across the board. Man. Like, they might finish higher in the standings with the same win total. Like,
the Heat won the East with 53 wins.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's only going to get tougher from here. But I do think it's going to be an absolute rock fight. I'm excited for it. I wish it wasn't so far away. But big thanks to all of our listeners tuning in live on YouTube. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by liking the video, click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. Make sure you subscribe as well. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cats.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.